Welcome to China in Context. I'm Duncan Bartlett. The Americans have a habit of blaming China for their misfortunes. One of the most consistent complaints is that by conceding market share to China, the manufacturing sector in the United States was plunged into a deep crisis, which continues to blight working class communities. It's being claimed that this has led to acute social problems, such as drug addiction and family breakdown. Plenty of Donald Trump supporters draw a link between their own troubles and China's apparent success. This leads to some embittered comments on American TV and radio talk shows where anti-China rhetoric often gets an airing. But how would a thoughtful economist appraise such claims? Would they be able to process them soberly without getting caught up in the political rhetoric? Well, our guest on the podcast today is noted for his excellent analysis of China and its role in the world. Rory Green is China economist for Global Data TS Lombard. Rory, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks, Duncan. Great to be back.
Now, I'd like to start with those striking claims that China is at least partly to blame for the troubles faced by men in America. The American Economic Association says that men have lost their earnings capacity, they're less attractive, apparently, to potential wives, and they're vulnerable to distressing outcomes such as drug addiction, even premature death. A special word is used, shock, or to be more precise, labor demand shock. Tell us about the use of the word shock here. Would you say that the US is still being impacted by a China shock?
I would say yes. And actually, the first China shock is probably over. Some of its results, as you outlined, are still here. But the first hit has finished. But actually, the second China trade shock, I think, is just beginning. And we'll probably get onto that in a bit more detail later. But if we just put the first China trade shock in context, since China joined the WTO, US manufacturing employment contracted by around 5 million jobs, which sounds like quite a lot, but is actually around sort of 3-4% of current total employment. So it's a large amount, but in aggregate, as a share of the wider US economy, not particularly significant. And we've also got to consider a couple of other contributing factors to perhaps the rise of populism, to the issues you addressed around blue-collar employment. And they are tech and the impact of automation, digitization and the hollowing out of middle-class employment. The great financial crisis hit to construction work, which is another big blue-collar employer. And finally, the reason that the China trade shock was tolerated for so long was the large benefits in terms of very low prices it provided for the majority of the US population. With all that being said, the first China trade shock was very real. Its impact on US manufacturing jobs has stabilized. The impacts in terms of rise of populism, loss of blue-collar employment, very much still here. And just before the next question, I'll highlight that the second China shock is really just getting started. And the second China trade shock is really going to come for the advanced manufacturing economies. And China really has a unique proposition here, never before seen, I believe, in world history. We have still relatively cheap wages, number one. Number two, developed market levels of technological capacity. Number three, enormous amounts of state support for these sectors. And number four, extraordinary scale within China. And those four combined are driving the second China trade shock, which is just getting started.
Well, that's a very balanced and thoughtful reply. And you're showing us that a lot of different factors are in play here, both in America and in China. But when it comes to the perception of the causes of social decline in the US, do you think that China is still shouldering a lot of the blame?
Yes. Yeah, I do, Duncan. And you know, China is being blamed for almost everything at the moment. but specifically on the trade issue, it is a prominent feature of US political discourse. Both presidential candidates are competing to be tough on China. Trump talking about 60% tariff on all Chinese imports to the US. Biden talking quite strongly as well. And we've just had Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen back from a trip to Beijing, stating very strongly that the US will not accept Chinese imports decimating new American industries. So it is very much in the crosshairs of Washington across both sides of the political divide.
It's interesting, if you look at the rhetoric from China, a lot of it actually captures some of the ideas which you just mentioned, which is that the decline in US manufacturing is down to structural issues. You mentioned technological progress. That's definitely a key factor. As factories get more efficient, they need less people. And US trade with the rest of the world is obviously important, not just China. So the Chinese are going to say that the arguments against them are being exaggerated, and that even without any trade deficit, the US would still inevitably witness a decline in manufacturing employment. What's your view on this?
Yes, I'm quite sympathetic to that view. And I think the speed of the decline is what has caused the issue here with the first China trade shock. And we can see the impact of technology on manufacturing share of employment in the US. It was manufacturing share of US jobs was as high as 30% in the 1950s. And it dropped to 15% already by the time China had joined the WTO. Today, it's around 9%. So you have a 30% decline to 15% over almost 15, 60 years. And then over a very much more rapid period, that dropped from 15% to 19%. So it's the speed of decline that's really causing the shock here, even though it would have happened, I think, organically due to the rise in technology and automation. The other factor we need to consider here, and what really exacerbated the damage to blue-collar employment in the US, is the collapse in the construction industry post-financial crisis. And until that point, the boom in real estate activity had actually offset a lot of the drop in manufacturing employment. Post-GFC, you had this double whammy where export-orientated industry getting hit, construction was getting hit, wider global recession really combining to exacerbate a lot of the underlying issues.
Now, the Biden administration has tried various tactics to counterbalance the social impact of China's rise. Could you talk us through the president's objectives and how this plays out in terms of policy?
I think it's also worth talking about the lack of policy from previous presidents as well. In hindsight, it's easy to say now that not enough was done to protect US industry, which would have been difficult, but I think more efforts could have been exerted there. And perhaps more importantly, to support the workers and communities affected by the initial China trade shock and also the GFC. If we look to more current US policy, Trump attempted to address the issue by directly going after the bilateral trade deficit with very little success. Biden is taking a different approach. He is seeking to reshore manufacturing to the US in efforts to boost both manufacturing employment, but also from a national security perspective, to gain greater control of crucial US supply chains. And this is being done via carrot and stick approach, subsidies for industries locating to the US, and larger tariffs for those relying on China in their supply chains as well. So a twofold approach with the goals of boosting both manufacturing employment and also adding to national security through greater production within the United States.
Well, look, for the sake of today's discussion, I think we can accept that China is a disruptive force in the global economy. Now, a few years ago, disruptive was always used in a negative way, but I know young startup companies that are proud of being disruptive in a sense that they're trying to, you know, reestablish a new order. Obviously, this disruption is to some extent linked to China's state capitalist model. What companies or sectors in the US do you think are going to be most affected by this intense competition from China?
Yeah, so it's certainly going to be very disruptive. And the state capitalism model is one of the factors, certainly, in that disruption. It puts sort of startups on steroids, if you will, through the provision of cheap credit and government support, in addition to those other factors I touched on at the top of the podcast. Globally, it's going to be quite a big shock. And before I get into the industry specifics, it's worth considering that this is going to be a different impact than the initial China trade shock. The second one will hit the advanced manufacturing economies like Germany, Japan, Korea. Those that benefited from China's initial rise are now going to be facing really tough export competition from China right at the top of the advanced manufacturing value chain. And in terms of the impact on inflation, obviously a key topic at the moment, because US and Europe have learned from the first China trade shock, they are going to be much more combative on trade barriers in an attempt to protect domestic industry. That, however, comes at a cost, which will be higher prices, feeding through to higher inflation. So very different impacts for advanced economies outside of the US, Europe, Northeast Asia. It's hard to see any company or country competing with China for an array of advanced manufacturing goods. So we should see the likes of Huawei, Chinese electric vehicles, Chinese semiconductors dominating the world, ex US and Europe. So in terms of the shocks that are coming for the industries, it is a pretty wide array of industries to come. Last year was, you could call it the EV shock, the year of the EV shock, the electric vehicle hit. This year, I think semiconductors, robotics, and probably in a couple of years, aviation will be the next big ones to come.
So you're mentioning the impact there of this advanced manufacturing on other East Asian countries, South Korea and Japan. And I note that one of the Biden administration's goals has been to expand partnerships with those countries to counter China. How do you rate the success of that approach so far?
The approach has had mixed success. And a sort of re-quote a line that gets mentioned a lot, I think it was initially from a leader of a sub-Saharan African country. And he said that when America visits, we get a lecture. And when China comes, we get an airport. And I think this really highlights the difficulty that Washington is facing here. They've been quite successful on a more sort of a hard power approach in limiting advanced technology exports to China, but there have been much less success in terms of incentivizing new trading relationships with the rest of the world. And particularly in East Asia, in the Asia Pacific, America is fighting geography. China is a massive economy within that region. America, equally larger, but a long way away from a trade perspective. So at the moment, we're seeing a lot of sticks from America, trade restrictions, tariffs, sanctions on China, but not much in terms of opening up of its domestic economy, offering some carrots to its allies, to others within the region, and competing with China on that economic aspect. So I would like to see more carrots and probably the same amount of sticks for the US to have a chance of success there.
Well, thank you, Rory, for that very perceptive analysis. That was Rory Green, China economist for Global Data, TS Lombard. This podcast is produced by the SOAS China Institute, part of the University of London. And you can find out more about our courses and research at soas.ac.uk. But for now, that's all from us here at the China in Context podcast team.